Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text number 9. Pashyesha me naryam ananta adye. Paratmoni twayapi mayi mayini. Mayam vitat yekshitum atma vaibhava. Yam kiyan aicham ivarchir agnao. Pashyesha me naryam ananta adye. Paratmoni twayapi mayi mayini. Mayam vitat yekshitum atma vaibhavam. Hyam kiyan aicham ivarchir agnao. Pashyesha isha. O Lord, may my anaryam contemptible behavior anante against the unlimited adye the primeval para atmani the super soul twayi you api even mayi mayini for the masters of illusion maya my illusory potency vitatya spreading ikshitum to see atma your vaibhavam power he indeed I pia how much I chum I desired eva just like archihi a small spark. Agnao, in comparison to the whole fire. Translation in purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. My Lord, just see my uncivilized impudence. To test your power, I try to extend my illusory potency to cover you. The unlimited and primeval supersoul, who bewilder even the masters of illusion. What am I compared to you? I am just like a small spark in the presence of a great fire. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. A great fire produces many sparks, which are insignificant in comparison to it. Indeed, if one of the small sparks were to try to burn the original fire, the attempt would be simply ludicrous. Similarly, even the creator of the entire universe, Lord Brahma, is an insignificant spark of the potency of God. And therefore, Brahma's attempt to bewilder the Supreme Lord was certainly ludicrous. Ludicrous. You know what it means? It's a joke. It's funny. Brahma here addresses Lord Krishna as Isha, which indicates that Krishna is not only the supreme master of everyone, but is also specifically the master of Brahma, who creates the universe directly under the guidance of the Lord, and who indeed is born directly from the Lord's own body. Brahma felt ashamed of his impudent attempts at deluding Lord Krishna, and he was therefore perfectly willing to be punished or forgiven by the Lord according to his decision. If Lord Krishna does not mercifully punish his devotees when they act improperly, their foolishness will simply increase and gradually completely overwhelm their devotional sentiments. Therefore, Lord Krishna kindly disciplines his devotees and maintains them on the progressive path back home, back to Godhead. Brahma is confessing to very severe offense. Anaryam. Brahma is the head of all the Aryas. That doesn't mean that he has white blood, that he's, some racial purity. An Arya doesn't mean that originally. This is a distortion of the idea of the word Arya. Arya is a measurement not of purity of blood, but of purity of consciousness, of purity of attention. More properly, a person who intends to advance his life spiritually, to make himself better spiritually, not just better materially, he's an Arya, Aryan. So by that measurement, who's the real Aryans? They may be in black or green or purple bodies, it doesn't matter. If they intend to perfect their lives, then they're Aryans. Krishna told Arjuna, don't act like a non-Aryan or a eunuch. By refusing to do your duty and running away from this battle that you're meant to fight. Don't be a non-Aryan by acting like a materialistic fool. Prabhupada has given us opportunity to become Aryans. We are un-Aryans. Why? Because everybody in this age is un-Aryan. We are no real Aryans. The followers of Hitler are trying to find the real Aryans, measuring people's skulls and their noses to see who's got pure Aryan blood and who doesn't. And they thought they had a few million people who were real Aryans and they could kill everybody else. But actually, there weren't even that many Aryans. They should have killed everybody because there are no real Aryans on this planet. Hitler was wrong. He didn't kill enough people. He should have killed everybody. If he was actually following his principles to get rid of the non-Aryans and purify the blood of the race, maybe he should just exterminate the human race altogether. Let the cockroaches take over. They're the real Aryans. Because the human race is polluted. It's corrupt. In Kali Yuga, there's no Ekali Kale Nahi Kon Dharma. In this Kali Yuga, there is no Dharma. Everybody's adharmic. Everybody's anarya. Very corrupt and fallen. Including the Westerners and the Easterners. Including the Indians. Including the so-called Paka Brahmanas. They're all corrupt in this modern age. If they weren't corrupt, why are they wearing pants? Why are they watching television and smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee and tea? Why? They're doing worse things. So, here's Lord Brahma calling himself Anaryam, or Anaryam is a noun formed from the adjective behavior, appropriate to somebody who's fallen. who's working against his spiritual progress. Just like Arjuna said, Anarya Jushtam. Well, you can turn that into a noun, Anaryam. Behavior that's unfit for an Arya, or is fit for the opposite person. And that's how Brahma is thinking of himself. I've acted like a low-class person. I'm supposed to be the most high-class person. I'm the one that all the demigods and sages look up to. All the brahmanas, all the people in the mode of goodness are supposed to idolize me as the exemplar of proper behavior and proper consciousness. I'm the head of society in this universe. And look what I've behaved like. And why is he blaming himself like this? He didn't try to kill Krishna, like many demons do. He didn't try to destroy Krishna. He didn't even try to kill Krishna's devotees, like Indra did. Indra tried to destroy Vrindavan and kill all the Vrijvasis. Brahma didn't do anything bad like that. He didn't attempt to kill anybody. He was just playing a trick, hiding the boys safely in a cave, and trying to have a match of wits, a battle of wits with Krishna, to see who can bewilder whom. Just a game. No violence involved. Not even any Vaishnava aparad. Did Brahma commit Vaishnava aparad by stealing Gaur's boys? I don't think so. It was just a game, a friendly game. And still he's thinking himself that I behaved like a very degraded person. He's feeling so guilty for it. Actually, he shouldn't. Actually, he doesn't have proper reason to feel like that. Let's not say he shouldn't. From the point of view of the objective facts, he's wrong to say that. But from the point of view of loving sentiment, of a proper attitude toward the Supreme Lord that a devotee should have, he's just correct. You can say satyameva jayate, only truth prevails. But the bare, naked truth is not always the right thing for a devotee. I'm not talking about lying to other people, I'm talking about what you think within your own heart, your own attitudes. You may not be the most fallen. You may be quite spiritually qualified. You're a fortunate soul and a very advanced soul who is engaged in Krishna consciousness, even though you've been born in a peculiar body, but you took to Krishna consciousness, you must have been practicing in a previous life. But you shouldn't think like that about yourself. It may be the fact, the objective fact, but the proper subjective reality is I'm a fallen soul, I have no qualification, just the mercy of my spiritual master. And that's how a devotee should think. So the raw truth, the bare naked truth is one thing, but the proper attitude can be another. You may have qualification, but you should not dwell on it. You should not think that you earned your position in devotional service by your qualification. You may have been born in a family of high-class brahmanas, and for generations, everyone in your family were great devotees, and therefore, I come from a family of great devotees, and therefore, by my birthright, I am also a great devotee of Krishna. That is very inappropriate attitude. It disqualifies one from actually being even a good devotee. It makes you a bad devotee. You may be a devotee, but not a very good one. If you're proud of being a great devotee, then you're not even a very good devotee. And if your reason for being proud is that everyone in your family for so many generations were also great devotees, then your reasoning is totally infallible. It's totally invalid. This is the upper sampradaya called Jati Gosai. They think that they're
entitled to the position of Acharya, representative of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because of the birth they have taken. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur rejects them as a class of deviants. Just like the law books will say, a man who steals more than one, according to the Dharma Shastra, a man who steals more than 1 kilo of gold, that's a lot of gold nowadays, but according to Manusmriti, you steal more than 1 kilo of gold, that's a capital offense. You should be killed for it. Less than that, you can be fined. But there's a limit. If you steal a kilo of gold, then you should be killed. So there's different degrees of crime. Anybody who has stolen 1 kilo of gold or more, or the equivalent, is in the category of a felon, or a person who should be killed for his crime. It's a category. And just by meeting the criterion, you belong to the category. And you're one of those labeled criminals who should be hung, or hit on the head with a club and killed. Like that, Brahma is labeling himself as an Arya. I'm in that category with all the other criminals. I've offended the Supreme Lord and his devotees. That's appropriate. It's the appropriate attitude for the humble devotee to have. Remorse. Because ultimately, what are we doing in this material world? Why are we here? Because we did rebel against Krishna. Otherwise, we wouldn't be in this world in most of our cases. We cannot claim that we were sent here on a special mission. You know, we're eternal associates of the Lord, and we were sent here to do some special service in the material world. I wouldn't dare to claim that. I have to assume I'm here because of offenses against the Supreme Lord and his devotees. That's why I'm here. Especially why I was born in New York City, you know, in the middle of the Kali Yuga, because of my offenses. And I have to be honest. That's honesty. That's reality. We're asked, how do you become humble? Simple answer, one good way to be, easy way to become humble, is to look at yourself honestly and realistically. Then you'll see something to be humble about. Lord Brahma works for Lord Brahma, and he's got all good qualifications, but he looks at himself and what he's done and what he's felt, and he feels very, very fallen. Of course, because he's a great devotee. So, that's very glorious. Even if what he says is technically true, it's very wonderful that he's got that devotional attitude and can see himself very critically and beg for Krishna's forgiveness for what was actually no real offense at all. But if you commit the mistake of begging forgiveness for an offense you didn't commit, there's no great harm in that, no loss. We can beg forgiveness for offenses day and night, even though we haven't done any, and it won't do us any harm. Just like if you don't wash your hands and then eat with your hands, you can get sick. If you eat with dirty hands or walk around all day with dirty hands, you have to wash your hands. If you don't, if you fail to wash your hands after eating, after going to the toilet, then it's a mistake, and it jeopardizes your health. It's wrong to not wash your hands when required. But what's the harm in washing your hands constantly? It may be a waste of time and a waste of soap, but there's no great harm done in it. You may wear out some skin, but there's no serious damage done if you wash your hands 100 times a day. There's no serious damage done if you beg for forgiveness for offenses 1,000, 1,000,000 times a day. Every time you meet a devotee, maybe you don't waste his time asking for forgiveness. It would be an annoyance if every time this devotee, you know, you had to talk to this devotee, he asked you for forgiveness, and there's nothing to forgive. It's sort of an annoyance. So maybe you don't ask verbally, but you think it. You think it every time you meet a devotee.
not to think, oh, that guy, you know, he's got so many faults, but think, oh my God, I've committed so many offenses against him. I'd better be nice to him. You may not come out and bother him asking for offenses, but you can think it. And you can think it a million times a day, and there's no harm. Hare Krishna. Okay. So are there any questions or comments on that? I thought we could have some... Oh, we do have questions. Please, please.
I still see a person who washes hands 100 times a day. He's a real person. He was a bit challenged mentally. There was nothing wrong with him going and washing his hands all the time. The only thing that was wrong
was that, he didn't have any time left for anything else.
Yes.
So I also saw devotees who feel remorseful all the time and effectively become paralyzed and kind of locked into their self-defeating mentality. So there should looks like there should be some proper balance between the two. And I just wonder about that.
We shouldn't. Remorse can be very negative when it's an excuse for sinking into the mode of ignorance and giving up all attempts to do anything. Then remorse becomes bad. So, we should feel guilty, but not discouraged about it. We should feel guilty and hopeful. That's a proper balance. You know, I'm a rascal, but Krishna and the devotees will save me. Not, I'm a rascal and I have no hope. Then you're denying the mercy of Krishna and the devotees, and you're really in trouble. So, sorry, but hopeful is how we should feel. Okay, tatte nukampam, yesterday's verse, tatte nukampam susamikshamana, punjena evadvikatam vipakam. I've done a lot of vipakas. You know, I've buttered my toast and now I have to eat it. I put the butter on the wrong side, and the side that's not toasted, but now I gotta eat it, I can't throw it away. So I've made a mess of my life for so many decades, maybe so many lifetimes, and now I gotta eat the toast that I buttered, the karma that I created for myself. I have to tolerate the reactions. But I'm eagerly expecting Krishna's mercy. He's just testing me. He's just seeing that I become ripe before he gives me his full mercy. And I'm patiently and eagerly expecting that I will get that mercy. So I'll tolerate happily the reactions of my offenses. I'm not saying that I really have that attitude, I'm just saying the words. Yeah. But this is how I'm supposed to think. And I'm happily tolerating the reactions of my own nonsense, expecting that Krishna will save me. That's what Brahma said in the last verse.
I'm trying to understand the analogy of the toast. Sorry.
Vipaka. You created your own bad reactions of karma by what you did. So I made a mess of my life. I gotta tolerate the reactions. So I just gave an example of, you know, you make a mess, you cook something and you make it wrong. And you still gotta eat it. You're not gonna throw it away. Okay? It's just an English idiom about buttering your toast. You know, you buttered it, now you have buttered the toast, you have to eat it now. But that's the idea behind it. It's not there in the Sanskrit. It's a colloquial English saying. The word is vipaka. Negative reaction. Yeah. Well, vipaka means when you cook something, the result of cooking. That's why an example fits. Because pa comes from paka, to cook. When something is digested, according to Ayurveda, somebody may have a taste on the tongue. That's one taste. But in the process of digestion, the taste can change. The lemon is sour,
to the tongue. But when it comes out of the stomach, it becomes sweet. When it enters the small intestines, the juice from the lemon is sweet. The sourness has been transformed into sweetness. So according to Ayurvedic terminology, the vipaka taste of lemon is sweet. So that has something to do about when you should eat lemons and when you shouldn't. Knowing that they come, they leave the stomach is sweet. Yes. That's vipaka, or the transformation of taste by digestion. No, well, no, but they your sins, your the reaction. No, well, there it just means it's the matured reactions of your past activities. Like, you know, it sits in your karmic stomach. You got cows have multiple stomachs. We have a karma stomach that digests our past deeds and produces the reactions. So when the reactions come out, it's something I create. I put it in my karmic stomach, and that's what comes out. If you eat, you know, you have a flu and you eat a big plate of rice, you can expect a lot of mucus will come out all over your body. It's a reaction. I mean, that's a physiological fact. That rice, you know, tends to make mucus, and if you've already got too much mucus and you've got inflamed infection with mucus, don't eat a pile of rice on top of that, especially at night. Yes, sir.
I have a question. So it is said that Ganesha Tikari, he can see his level of devotion because he's very proud. He's thinking that he's the best devotee, Ganesha Tikari, and he can see his real level. And also Uttama Tikari, he can see his level because he is too humble and he see everybody else as a devotee. So how to be realistic, how to understand our real level?
Well, the best thing is to be an Uttama Tikari if you can. Because Uttamadikari is not ignorant. He's letting his emotions take charge instead of his analytic thought. So therefore, even though he knows analytically, I'm the best devotee, he knows it. He knows what the criteria are, and he can see that he's got them. So critically, analytically, he knows, he's not ignorant, that he's a very advanced devotee. But he feels, he says, that's okay, it doesn't matter. I may be the best devotee in this world, but this world is so degraded that, you know, being the best in this world, a big fish in a small pond, it doesn't amount to much. I may be the best devotee in this whole planet, but it's such a lousy planet anyway, I'm still a lousy devotee. Yeah. So he's thinking like that. No matter what the objective, thought is, that, oh yes, I've got these qualifications. But he, you know, his feeling is that that's okay, but it's not good enough to satisfy Krishna or to actually come up to the standard. I may have this qualification, that qualification, but the real qualification for being accepted in Krishna's service is much higher than that. No matter what I've done, right? It's not good enough. So Uttamadikar, he knows, but his feelings transcend his knowledge. Better to be an Uttamadikari. It's not to, you know, to be avoided because he's deluded.
I'm asking because there is one statement, I think, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that one who actually has Prema Bhakti, he can see his Prema. Prema
cannot see his Prema.
Cannot see his Prema.
Maybe he can't see it, but he certainly can feel it. You know, you can feel the ecstasy. Where's the ecstasy coming from? Because I stuck my finger in an electric socket? Or, you know, it's coming because of prema. So you can't deny it. You may not see it in a sense, but you feel it. So it's not that Uttamadikari is an ignorance like the Prakriti Bhakta, like the Kanishka Bhakta. It's much more desirable to be on the high end of the scale than the low end of the scale. Much more desirable. Okay.
Maybe I'm wrong, but
please.
maybe I'm wrong, but it looks like the self-evaluation is not even for, not at all for ourselves. It doesn't matter if we are Uttamadhikari, Samadhimadhikari, it looks like devotees never apply those criteria to themselves. When it comes to association, then they have to be very careful about who they're hanging out with. But as far as themselves, looks like they just, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but looks like they just judging their level by how they fulfill the orders of their spiritual master. And
well,
I guess.
I think it's not all the same all the time. There are times to be objective. There are times to take a test and see where you're at. Vishwanath Chakravarti wrote the Madhurya Kadambini as a self test. Devotees can read this book and measure, like a thermometer, where they are on the scale. It's calibrated. If this is your symptoms, okay, you're on that level. So measurement can be taken, and Vishwanath Chakravarti wrote that book, very important book, just for that. Spiritual IQ test. And what level are you on? And that's for measuring yourself. So there are times when it's appropriate. Just that's like we don't drive you nuts by giving you a test every day, but we have one test at the end of the semester.
It looks like this test, even if it is applicable only to a very narrow scope of devotees, because as you have just explained and Sarvagya Prabhu mentioned, that those below a certain very narrow range of devotees, they fail the test abysmally because they think themselves above it, or they think themselves to be too advanced. And those who are above it, like Uttamadhikaris, even they still can apply it. First of all, they don't need it, and secondly, they, as you said, emotions override their intelligence and intellectual considerations, and we're just left with a bunch of Madhyamadhikaris, very few of them, and I don't know if they need the test to apply to themselves because they're just busy preaching.
Well, Madhyamadhikaris are busy preaching. How many of them are preaching 24 hours a day? And should they be? They should have some sadhana too. Without sadhana, where are you going to get any strength to preach? Sadhana includes the process of introspection. You should look at yourself. How can you effectively preach if you don't know your strengths and your weaknesses? It's like you want to be a salesman. You want to communicate to people and sell a product. You've got to know what you do well and what you don't do well. And don't try to do things that you don't do well. Adjust your presentation according to your strengths and your weaknesses. My left side looks good, so I don't turn my right side, But if I face this way, people have a positive impression. So you know these things. People, who get on TV, they know this, to turn this way. Apply makeup to make up for it. So like that, you have to know your strengths and weaknesses if you want to preach, if you want to sell this product. Even just practically, you got to know yourself. The salesman's got to know himself in order to do his job. What to speak of having a sadhana beside being a preacher? You got to have a full spiritual life, not just on the road 24 hours a day. You got to sit down and chant your rounds and look at your heart too.
Yes. It's a very interesting topic. Maybe not for everybody, but I'm asking these questions because I have seen, especially after the book Madhurya Kadambini was produced and published and devotees started reading it in the Russian language, and some of them became preoccupied with measuring themselves up, and that was their main devotional service, you could say, trying to figure out which level devotional service you're at. That's one thing. Another thing is that it looks like even that ability to measure ourselves correctly comes when we apply ourselves to something which is given to us by superior authorities, our spiritual master. When we measure ourselves against his instructions, expectations, and explicit orders, and then that becomes a very realistic estimation of one's own status, whereas trying to analyze anarthas in the heart and measuring ourselves up against those scales, which Vishnath Chakravarti could explain. Maybe it's a manual for the spiritual master to judge his disciples, but sometimes devotee, it becomes an anarthic in itself for some of them, just to keep guessing who am I, and especially when it comes to comparing myself to other people according to that scale.
Again, there's appropriate time for this, for self-evaluation. It's not, you know, just like suppose we find out that someone caught dengue fever caused by a different kind of mosquito. Then we're going to ask all the devotees, please take your temperature. If you've got a fever of 101 Fahrenheit, then you may have this disease. So we ask all the devotees to check their temperature. We pass around, you know, thermometers. But it's not that you go around all day with a thermometer stuck in your mouth. You just do it once and check. You know, the person who's got a thermometer in his mouth all day, every day, he's a hypochondriac. It's crazy. But, you know, to once in a while, when there's a reason for it, to take your temperature, that's appropriate. So, yeah, you know, you can misuse Madhurya Kadambini, sure. You can misuse the Bhagavatam and the Gita also.
That's the question, main question. If it's a self-evaluation and the look at the thermometer, or somebody like an expert doctor physician says, okay, you're fine, don't worry. Even if it's 37.1 still.
Okay, but like before you go to the doctor, you can take your temperature. You know, find out my temperature is perfectly normal. Maybe I don't have to go to the doctor. Or I've got 100, you know, the thermometer broke because it was so high a temperature. Then I better go to the doctor. So before you go to the doctor, you can check your own temperature.
That could be the danger. So, like, for instance, if it's not 36.6, it's 36.7, and I become paranoid, wow, I'm sick. But I go to the doctor, and he says, no, it's fine. Even if it's 37.0, it's fine still.
Yes.
So.
Okay, then he tells you, next time that happens, don't bother me next time. You make a mistake once. You know, to be a little too cautious, it's okay. But when the guru tells you, okay, enough's enough, you know, put down the Madhurya Kadambini and go out and sell a few books, then you listen. Yeah. You have to do it under the guidance of the doctor. But it's not that you had to bother the doctor every time you sneeze. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so we'll stop here. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam.